I'm very excited to be here. Thank you all for deciding to spend this time with me today as we take a peek inside the leader's brain. And my hope today is to share with you some practical bits of neuroscience that can help you better manage yourself and influence others. But before I give you a roadmap of our teleseminar today, I'd like to offer you a quick brain-boosting exercise. It's very easy, as many brain optimization techniques. And it comes from a recent study that shows that when you boost the level of communication between your right and left hemispheres of the brain, your capacity for creative problem-solving increases. And all we need to do to become creative is to move our eyes horizontally, left to right, back and forth for about 30 seconds. Don't do it if you're driving, but those of you who are comfortable at your desks, just keep your eyes moving left to right for about 30 seconds to improve your creative problem solving. So that's pretty easy. Now that we have our whole mind engaged, let's begin by exploring what neuroscience has to offer on the topic of change. Because change is at the core of leadership. It is especially true in this day and age when the uncertainty in the marketplace, the speed of information flow, the urgency of decision making leave people stressed and overwhelmed. According to a study by the American Institute of Stress, companies lose an estimated $300 billion annually to lowered productivity, absenteeism, healthcare, and related costs stemming from stress. So as leaders, we really have to find new ways to tap into our potential for peak performance in these turbulent times. And imagine that you could achieve a specific state of mind that transforms the way people make decisions and take actions in the course of a day. You may have heard the term situational awareness. It's often used in the military context, but it's also has its equivalents in the martial arts, where the term is loosely translated as the reserved mind. And it's a state of heightened senses and perception and sharpened awareness that enables people to take the relevant clues from their immediate environment and make optimal decisions in a dynamic setting because they understand how information, events, and their own actions impact their goals and objectives. And this quality is crucial for leaders. And the good thing is that it can be learned and trained through practice. And today, I will share with you a five-step formula to help you introduce some brain-friendly practices into your daily life so that you could reduce stress, improve performance, and decision-making. When people ask me what I do, I often tell them that I help people rewire their brains. And it sounds a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it usually gets people's attention. And sometimes people picture electrodes attached to the brain. But the reality is that we are continuously shaping and molding our brains throughout our daily experiences, although we may not be aware of it. And here's what I call the paradox of change. On the one hand, we all know that change is hard. People resist change even if it's something they would benefit from, like a positive habit. And the reason, there is actually a good reason for that. Our brains are wired to do lots of things on autopilot to conserve energy and resources. And this autopilot mechanism allows us to function in the world without being overwhelmed with the multitude of decisions we would otherwise have to make. The downside is that the same mechanism interferes with our progress by repeating and reinforcing our old behaviors that we may not like. In fact, studies on habit formation reveal that as much as 45% of what we do every day is habitual, that is performed almost without thinking, in the same location, at the same time each day, and usually because of subtle clues in our environment. So about half of what we just do reactively. We react to our environment. And yet, our brain is capable of quite remarkable changes all throughout our lives. We used to think that the brain was fixed for life and that we lose neurons as we age, and that's just it. Well, we now know that we are continuously producing new brain cells and create new pathways in our brains. And the brain's ability to rewire itself as a result of experience is called neuroplasticity. So we're going to be talking a lot about this ability of the brain to change as a result of experience. And just to illustrate the point of how adaptable our brains can be to our environment, here is one of the examples of neuroplasticity. If you were to wear blindfolds for 2 days, your visual cortex in the brain would reorganize itself to process sound and touch instead of vision. Now, once you take the blindfolds off, the visual cortex will return to the visual processing within 12 or 24 hours, and it will stop responding to tactile or auditory signals. That's how quickly our brain can adapt. And there's actually, this story comes from an unusual boarding school in Spain where teachers who instruct blind children go to study darkness, that's what they call it, and in this way they better understand their students' world. So the remarkable thing is that we can participate actively and consciously in the rewiring of our brains to better performance and overall well-being. And depending on where we focus our attention, we're going to build different sets of connections and different pathways, and our habits develop accordingly. So imagine that you're on a plane flying over a city at night, and you look down and see the city lights, and they appear like a golden carpet. It's a beautiful view. And as you look closer, you notice that some parts of the city are dark and other parts are very well lit. And you can also identify big roads and highways by the lights that run alongside those roads. The whole infrastructure of the city is right in front of your eyes. Now picture that the grooves in the brain are like those well-lit highways. When certain information enters your brain, specific pathways are activated. And the pathways that light up a lot become our default routes that represent our familiar patterns of behavior. And so if we want to change our behavior, we need to start creating new pathways in the brain and make them new default thought focus through focused attention, consistency, and repetition. So I'll introduce you to the 5-step framework that I call VOLVE. It's an acronym, and it's going to help us integrate this recent brain research into simple brain-friendly practices to boost our situational awareness and performance as leaders. And this 5-step VOLVE system is a code that stands for vision, attention, learning, value, and energy. And I hope you have your notebooks ready because there is a lot of content to cover there. So vision, attention, learning, value, and energy. So going on to vision, imagine that you could double your energy, supercharge your cognitive abilities, hone your skills to perform at the peak capacity. Where would you direct all that power? As leaders, we often look for new ways and behaviors that can help people move out of their comfort zone and embrace the uncertainty of change, which is a hard thing to do for the brain that enjoys the status quo. And we do it by offering a compelling vision, the desirable outcome of change. Here's a story I love. When Michelangelo was asked how he created his famous sculpture of David, out of the block of marble, he said, "I simply chipped away everything that wasn't David." I simply chipped away everything that wasn't David. Now, you can chip away at marble, but you won't create David unless you have a clear vision. So what is your David, your vision as you chip away at your daily tasks? To take this analogy a step further, current leaders seem to be working with the medium that doesn't stay the same as marble. Instead, it quickly changes in response to the environment. Perhaps it's more like those pastry chefs' competitions when they create amazing pastry sculptures out of sugar or chocolate, and as they go on for hours in those competitions, the chocolate starts to melt and some structures sag, and the chefs have to be resourceful and quick to keep their vision alive. And that's what many leaders have to deal with right now. The vision is not something that you just do once and write it down and forget about it. It is actually a process of visioning that leaders need to incorporate into their busy schedules and keep revisiting. Why is having a clear vision so important from the brain's perspective? In neuroscience, there is a concept called competitive plasticity. All our skills and behaviors compete for the brain processing power. Our brain maps are governed by the principle of use it or lose it. If we stop exercising certain mental skills, we do not simply forget them. In fact, the brain map space for those skills is turned over to the skills we practice instead. And it's not easy to maintain that focused energy and clarity when we need to put out fires or respond to things as they happen. Those reactive behaviors take away the brain power from our more important tasks. And because leaders are visionaries, they need to turn the visioning process into some sort of a ritual that can signal to the brain, this is my priority, this is important. Because your vision then becomes a magnet and a filter to the brain. And that magnet is attracting solutions and actions that support it and repel things that go against the vision. If you have that vision clear in your brain is going to work on solving some problems associated with the vision, even if you're not consciously thinking about it. But you do have to reinforce it. So how do you make your vision brain friendly for yourself and others? Not surprisingly, you use stories, vivid images, and emotions. In the business world, we have what I call the reign of rationality. We are trained to rely on statistics, logic, critical thinking, bullet point presentations. But when it comes to making decisions and acting, there is more and more evidence that we are guided by our emotions and stories our brains create about the world around us. Our brain is a storyteller. Its function is to make sense of events and situations. And when there are gaps in the information, the brain will fill in those gaps to create a story based on our past experiences and beliefs. Interestingly, this story may not be accurate. As much as we like to trust our own brain, studies show over and over again it can mislead and deceive us, all with the purpose of keeping us comfortable where we are. So masterful leaders need to be aware of it, and they act more like movie directors when they communicate their vision. They understand what's going on in the minds of their audience to connect and take people where they have never been before. Visualization is one of the most powerful and yet underused skills in the business world. It turns out that action and imagination often activate the same parts of the brain. The images we create in our mind's eye are as real to our brain as the ones we see with our eyeballs. That's how people can improve performance through visualization, and it's called a mental rehearsal. So when we need to learn a physical skill, for example, learning to play golf, mental practice of the skill can produce the same physical changes in the motor system as the physical practice. And this effect has been achieved in studies that involved people learning to play the piano, athletes in training, and even in perceptual learning. For example, medical diagnostics, when people had to detect something that is usually not very noticeable on, let's say, an X-ray, and they practiced mental visualization before they did the actual diagnostics, and it helped. So mental rehearsal is a great technique for leaders to use with their teams. The other important part is creating in people a sense of ownership and control over the process. And it's very important if we want to engage our brains. And it's especially important right now when we need our teams to be creative. And we also, as more Gen Ys enter the workforce. I have a story to tell. If you look around your desk, you probably have a post-it pad somewhere. The post-it pads are one of the most popular 3M products, as you may guess. But in the beginning, they almost didn't make it because the salespeople promoted them through brochures and other written material, and that didn't work very well. Until one of the leaders of a sales team noticed that people liked to play with post-it pads. So salespeople changed their strategy, and they began offering samples, and people loved them, and they became a hugely popular product. Now, it's the same with ideas. People need to try them out. They need to make them their own to feel engaged. One of my favorite visioning techniques that I often use with clients is actually storyboarding. And it was first used by Walt Disney back in 1928 when his artists were working on his first talking cartoon, Steamboat Willie. Disney wanted full animation, which required a lot of drawings, and there were piles of drawings all over the place, all over the studio. And Walt Disney came up with this idea that his artists should put their drawings up on the walls of the studio in sequence, so he could see just from looking at the wall how far he was into the project. And there are various ways of doing storyboarding right now in business, but for our purposes, we can think of the vision as an evolving story. And the storyboard could include your most important chapters or headlines of this story. Each of them can be brainstormed separately with your teams. And it's a flexible and dynamic process that allows your team members visualize, brainstorm, and track the progress, as well as make the vision their own. Now, when I talk about the visioning process, people often wonder which is the greater motivator, fear or desire. And as you probably know, we are biologically wired to avoid pain and maximize pleasure. But there is interesting recent research into the effect of positive and negative emotions on our resourcefulness and our ability to think clearly. Psychologists have known for a long time that negative emotions are so strong and so effective in seizing our attention because our survival has depended on them. It's like the fear of a tiger or the disgust at the sight of rotten food. All those emotions have been there to protect us. Here's what happens when we experience strong negative emotions. And that could be when we're angry or we're under stress. The glucose, which is our brain's fuel, goes to the amygdala in the limbic system of the brain. And the amygdala is our emotional memory control center. This is the part of the brain that triggers the fight or flight mode. And as a result, the prefrontal cortex, which is our brain region implicated in planning complex tasks, decision making, and also moderating correct social behavior, doesn't have enough energy anymore to think clearly because all the glucose went to the amygdala. And this is how our mind freezes. That's why it's so hard to think clearly under pressure. When we experience negative emotions, our focus is very narrow. This tunnel vision precludes us from switching perspectives and seeing creative solutions. So fear can be a great motivator when it comes to threats to our safety and our security. And it usually works best in cases when we want somebody to refrain from action, like with kids, don't touch that stove. Positive emotions, however, make us more creative and resourceful. And the evidence comes from the research by neuropsychologist Barbara Fredrickson. Her findings reveal that positive emotions tend to broaden our focus, enabling us to discover more tools and solutions to life's challenges, and ultimately making us more resourceful. Positive emotions let our minds open or bloom, as she says. And in Dr. Fredrickson's study, she used a special kind of meditation practice, which is called the loving kindness meditation, which has been shown to increase the frequency of positive emotions. So in that type of practice, you gather your attention around words and phrases of love and peace that you repeat rhythmically and direct to yourself and others. And in the long term, this practice was shown to increase positive emotions, and those emotions resulted in more resilience in people and more life satisfaction. Now, it's important to remember that all emotions are transient. The point is not to try to be positive all the time, but rather to increase the frequency of positive emotions. Dr. Fredrickson's discovered that experiencing positive emotions in a 3-to-1 ratio with the negative ones makes people more resilient and creative in meeting life's challenges and achieving their goals. So try to strive for this 3-to-1 ratio of positive to negative, because negatives are pretty strong. There are strong emotions in our brain. And if we want to be resourceful and creative, we need to cultivate our positive mindset. Now, moving from vision onto the second prong, which is attention. Let me ask you, how do you start your workday? do jump right into your email inbox and get lost in the sea of unread messages calling for your attention? If so, before you know, your mind is probably racing from one thought to another to another. For many people, email is a good example of how we give away the control of our schedule in response to other people's agendas and invite overwhelm into our day right from the start. We also lose precious moments when we can maximize our brain power, and here's why. When too much noise and input enters our brain, we become fuzzy thinkers. The overwhelm and information overload add to our stress levels, and when we are stressed, prolonged stress elevates cortisol, a stress hormone that appears to shrink the hippocampus, a part of the brain associated with memory and other cognitive functions. So the point is that if we want to be efficient, productive, and creative at work, we need to dedicate our most productive brain time to our most important tasks and challenges. And our most productive time is when our brain is quiet, oftentimes in the morning before we are bombarded with all of the information. Attention is probably the leader's most precious asset, and it is limited by its nature. Our logical and planning part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, is really easily overwhelmed. It can process just about 7 pieces of information in our conscious mind at any given moment. And the more data we have to deal with, the harder it becomes to think clearly. It's also important to remember that the brain operates on alternating cycles of high attention and downtime. And during the downtime, the brain engages in processing, questioning, revising our understanding in order to comprehend and make sense of the information. And the brain will interject its own downtime in order to strengthen the new synaptic connections, whether you schedule it or not. So if you want to work with your brain, try to create some downtime when your brain can absorb the ideas and the new knowledge. So it's impossible to focus on something for hours without exhausting the brain. It is also helpful to remember that our conscious mind is just a fraction of what's going on in the brain at any given time. It's almost like our conscious mind is like a narrow beam of light in the vast darkness of subconscious brain maps. And these subconscious brain maps store our beliefs, our past experiences, and memories as networks of synaptic connections that can be brought into consciousness by certain triggers. In the neuroscience, there is a saying, neurons that fire together, wire together, and neurons that fire apart, wire apart. And that's how we create this network of synaptic connections that form our knowledge base. Interestingly, for centuries, artists, musicians, inventors have developed practices to access their subconscious brain maps for creative solutions. And most of us have also experienced those sudden insights, those aha moments when we least expect them. And probably if I were to ask you when it's more likely for you, you would say something like you were in the shower or you were exercising. So it's not when you're actually thinking about the problem when you're more likely to have an insight. And there's a reason for that. Neuroscientists started to look into this process of how we can create insights, if not on demand, then at least increase the likelihood of their occurrences. And they came up with a series of steps that you need to do to actually help those insights come to the surface of your conscious mind. First, you need sufficient knowledge and understanding of the issues that you're trying to solve. It's much like athletes train before a competition. You need to condition your brain by giving the problem your full effort and attention. So you're going to be thinking about it, you're trying to problem solve, you use your logical mind, and at some point you're likely to get stuck, and that's okay, because here's the trick. In order for you to overcome that stage, you have to get away from the problem for a while. The downside of the knowledge and expertise is that we become too rigid in our approaches. And the brain needs some quiet time to restructure the problem and allow us to look at it from a different angle. That's where those subconscious brain maps come useful. And that's when the insight is more likely to occur. Scientists believe that sleep for example, helps to absorb and reorganize information. So naps often lead to this insightful aha moments. A positive attitude, interestingly, like I said, helps too, because it helps us to be more resourceful. And so if you take a break from the problem, try to do something fun. You can also use a walk in the park or exercising. All those activities kind of quiet your brain, and your brain continues to work on the problem even though you don't know it. Here's something else you can do. It turns out that we solve our problems in our dreams and as well as in daydreaming. There have been a number of studies done. A new University of British Columbia study finds that our brains are much more active when we daydream than we previously thought. And in fact, activity in numerous brain regions increases when our minds wander. The study also finds that the brain areas associated with complex problem solving previously thought to go dormant when we daydream are in fact highly active during these episodes. So if you're working on a difficult problem, sometimes it's good just to let your mind wander. You also can use your dreams to solve some of the especially emotional issues. There was another study done by the University of Alberta and the University of Montreal of 470 psychology students. And the study revealed that dreams that occurred 6 to 7 days after the remembered event often reflected interpersonal interactions, problem resolution, and positive emotions. So the findings suggest that people continue to work through their personal activities and difficulties in dreams. And this is something fairly new, that we understand how our subconscious mind, how our subconscious maps work when we don't clearly think about the problem. So these are all useful strategies to leverage your attention in various brain states. But there are also plenty of unproductive patterns that work against our brain, and unfortunately we engage in those patterns. And I actually use the acronym DUMP for them, because those are the patterns that need to be eliminated or dumped if we want to improve performance and efficiency. And DUMP is another acronym that stands for distractions, unproductive thoughts, multitasking, and procrastination. All quite familiar to us. For our purposes today, I just have time to address multitasking, because it is so prevalent and multitasking doesn't work. Our brains cannot do parallel processing if it requires conscious awareness. Multitasking is really a rapid task switching, and we can get better at minimizing the time as we switch, but the more complex and unfamiliar the tasks are, the longer it is going to take to switch between them. So we are losing our mental energy, and I call it the sprinkler effect. Just like the sprinkler cuts through the stream of water, dissipating it, multitasking dissipates our focus and perception. Studies suggest that multitaskers tend to retain the distracting pieces of information in their short-term memory, which affects their ability to focus. Our short-term memory can only capture about 7 pieces of information at a time. And if we put into it some irrelevant bits and pieces, our capacity to think gets worse. Even if the interruption itself takes only a moment, we lose our cognitive focus, and it takes longer for us to get back to the original task. And we actually spend more time on the next step of the task than it would normally take. So limit multitasking, especially if you're working on complex problems. Now, we have talked extensively about the two components of VOLVE now, the vision and attention. So we're ready now to explore learning. Brains thrive on learning and mental challenges. Leaders must be lifelong learners whose brains stay plastic and capable of adapting to challenging new environments. Remember that the brain keeps developing regardless of age, and it reflects what you do with it. Plasticity is really the capacity of the brain to change with learning. And changes associated with learning occur mostly at the level of the connections between neurons in the brain. So new connections can form, and the internal structure of the existing synaptic connections can change. But once new neurons appear in your brain, where they stay in your brain and how long they survive depend on how you use them. So the principle of use it and lose it means challenge your brain often with fundamentally new activities. It's not enough to improve your existing skills. To challenge the brain, we need to learn new skills, have a variety of hobbies, read and consume information from fields different from our own. And that's, expertise has its downsides because it fosters tunnel vision when we get stuck in the old ways that worked for us in the past, but they may not be adequate for the current situation. So as leaders, we need to be aware of this and expand our knowledge base. Many breakthroughs emerge at the intersection of industries, concepts, and cultures. And the brain is really good at making those connections from unrelated, seemingly unrelated fields. So cultivating the beginner's mind is a useful leadership skill. When Google was developing Wave, their approach was to imagine what would email look like if it were invented today. And this is a powerful question to ponder in any type of business. What would your service, what would your product look like if it were invented today? Creating that that beginner's state of mind is important. Interestingly, there are also a number of activities that have been scientifically documented to change the structure of the brain. So if you're looking for a hobby to keep your brain vibrant, you may want to try juggling, learning to play an instrument, or learning a foreign language. All three were shown to change our gray matter. Interestingly, in all cases, you don't need to become proficient in those skills to gain brain-related benefits. You just have to do it. In the case of juggling, it took only 7 days for people who were just complete beginners to change their, to improve their eye and hand coordination and other brain-related benefits. So don't just stick to what you know. Try to expand your horizons, try new hobbies. Your brain will benefit from it. Moving on to value. That's the fourth component of VALV. So we talked about vision, attention, learning, and now value. By value, I don't mean organizational values as we usually talk about them. This is really about the brain-based reward system. What keeps the brain interested and excited? And the brain-based reward system is all about creating meaning and expectations. It is implicated in a variety of activities from learning to internet surfing, and most notoriously, gambling. Our brain continuously searches for patterns and makes predictions about how things are going to turn out. It then compares these predictions to what actually happens and detects prediction errors. Based on this information, our dopamine neurons revise their expectations, enabling us to learn from our past experiences. Interestingly, our brain also interprets near misses as wins. And the reason may be that such positive reinforcement after near misses encourages learning. So even if we didn't quite make it right, the brain will reward us because the brain wants us to keep practicing the skills until we get better. That's the core of the whole positive reinforcement approach. It's a brain-friendly approach. Now, when the brain is busy predicting, it produces more neuromodulator dopamine, which is responsible for focused attention and more pleasurable experience. Interestingly, our prediction neurons become even more excited when there is no pattern for our wins. When it cannot guess, it keeps guessing because it's very natural, but there's no really pattern to recognize. The brain will start imposing a pattern even when none exists. That explains how people can spend hours pulling a lever of a slot machine in a casino. Imagine what would happen if you were to get a regular salary for pulling the same lever, but no chance of a random win. You'd be bored to death very soon. So random rewards is really what keep the excitement alive, but it can also lead to gambling addictions as we know. So the challenge I want to pose for you is how to use this behavior of dopamine neurons for the force of good to motivate people. And one example comes from a finance professor of Harvard Business School who created a pilot program called Save to Win. And it was introduced in Michigan, where Michigan residents could invest as little as $25 into a 1-year Save to Win certificate of deposit for a chance to win an annual grand prize of $100,000 plus some monthly cash prizes. So the goal was to encourage more people to save, but it was done by bringing the element of lottery into the process. So you could think about how maybe perhaps some peer-to-peer reward systems that leverage some of those behaviors of the brain can be improved with this brain science in mind. So random wins excite our brain. Now with that, let me move to the last point of our discussion, which is energy. And energy is really the component, this component is about providing fuel and good care for your brain. The brain only weighs about 2% of body mass, but it consumes over 20% of the oxygen and nutrients we intake. So it's important to get enough oxygen to your brain to function properly, and exercise is one of the best ways to do that. It's also important to watch what you eat. And you may have heard some foods are called brain foods because they are helping. Those include omega fatty acids that are found in fish as well as walnuts. If you don't like fish, you can eat walnuts. Also, blueberries are great for the brain. So as strange as it may sound, what we eat affects our thinking capacity. It also affects our memory. Exercise not only increases the amount of oxygen your brain can consume, it also helps you create new brain cells. So adults who exercise into their older age show better plasticity in their brains. Finally, practicing positive future-oriented thoughts are also is also a great way to keep your brain plastic, and this is because of the stress effect. The positive thoughts counteract the effects of stress, and stress, especially prolonged stress, elevates cortisol, and cortisol kills brain cells. So as you try to bring more fun and positive interactions into your life. Finally, how you deal with people becomes also quite important to the brain. Brain is a very social thing. We have what's called the mirror neurons, and the mirror neurons is what helps kids learn how to act in the world by watching others. And we keep using them throughout our adult life. If somebody is in pain, our brain reacts to it as if we were, because that's the function of the mirror neurons. If you have maintained stimulating friendships and relationships, those neurons and your brain is going to benefit. So this is as far as your energy goes. It's about nutrition, it's about exercise, it's about positive mindset, and it's about important social interactions. So it's been a lot of information. I got you through the whole valve system just to remind you and summarize the main points. Valve is about vision. It's important to have a very clear vision because of competitive plasticity, because your brain filters a lot of information based on what is important to you. So you want to put the right filters into place. Attention is your most precious resource, and it's very limited as far as the conscious brain comes in. So you want to try to access your subconscious brain maps for insights, for aha moments, for those unrelated pieces of information that come together to form a creative solution. Learning is the process that keeps the brain plastic throughout a life, and you want to look for new ways to challenge your brain. Brain is like a muscle. It likes new challenges. If you keep doing the same thing, the effect diminishes. So you have to try new hobbies, new materials, try to keep your brain excited. Now, value is all about our dopamine and predictions and expectations. You want to understand how the prediction mechanism works so you can bring more of excitement and motivation for your brain into your life. And finally, energy is about taking time and good care of your brain through proper nutrition, exercise, and good interactions. So I think we're getting closer to the end of my presentation, at which point I will be very happy to answer any questions that you may have about the brain.